Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this fine food Friday, April 26th. I'm Ray Graff. Today on the program, we tip our glasses back and turn back the pages of the calendar to yesteryear and discuss beer and the history of suds in New York's Capital Region and beyond. Here for the conversation are Craig Gravina of the Albany Ale Project, Sam Pagano of the C.H. Evans Brewing Company at the Albany Pump Station, and Maeve McEnany of Discover Albany. You have a question about beer or the storied history of the beverage in this land? If so, give us a call at 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number, 800-348-2551. Craig, Sam, Maeve, your beer calls coming up on Vox Pop after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk beer and suds history on this episode of Food Friday. In the studio with us, three guests. Craig Gravina is the co-author of Upper Hudson Valley Beer, co-founder of the Albany Ale Project, and an all-around New York beer history nerd. Founded in 2010, the Albany Ale Project is focused on bringing the history and stories of an industry that helped to build New York's capital city. And he's always the wearer of interesting hats, a very interesting one today. You can see it online at WAMC.org. Just click the video link. Sam Pagano is the brewer at C.H. Evans Brewing Company at the Albany Pump Station. He's also worked at Brown's Brewing, Mad Jack Brewing, and City Steam Brewery. Rounding out our trio is Maeve McEnany. She's the Education and Heritage Coordinator at Discover Albany. Working with Discover Albany, Craig and Sam will be making numerous stops around the city May 3rd with their 19th century Albany Amber Ale as part of Craft Beer Week. If you have a question about brewing, about beer, the history of beer, call us now, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number, if you got a beer question or a comment, 800-348-2551. Craig, Sam, Maeve, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Thank you.
Howdy.
Well, first of all, Sam and Maeve, where are your hats?
I don't know. Mess up my beautiful hair.
Well, you see.
Wear many hats.
I run hot, so, you know, keep that cool.
Craig, where does one in this non-Dickensian century find a hat like that?
It's a stovepipe hat for everyone who can't see me on the radio, which is everyone. I don't know. The internet. The magic of the internet. I believe it's from Jackson Hat Company.
Do you wear that around town?
Oh yeah,
really?
Absolutely. Do I wear it around town?
He does.
Not on like a Tuesday, but when we're doing the neighborhood beer tours, I definitely wear it.
Do you ever have anyone follow you around with a camera, just like a candid camera thing, and say, "Hey, let's see what the reaction is to this thing"?
I've had people point and laugh.
Okay,
even when I'm not wearing the hat, I have people point and laugh.
We are not going to judge you on this program. It's a Food Friday. We talk about beer, and tell us about this Discover Albany and the touring of the beer project.
All right, so I don't know, maybe about a year and a half ago.
Yeah. Devised at a pub.
Yeah.
After a few.
Right.
Yeah.
So Maeve and I have known each other for a while, and I was like, you know what, I want to do some like beer related history stuff around the city, and I'm like, who am I going to talk to? I'm going to talk to Maeve. And we started putting together all these different events, and we've done a bunch of them. We're doing the neighborhood beer tours that I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. We roped Sam into doing some of these recreations that we build events around. We've done stuff at Tenbrooke Mansion, Crelo.
I mean, if you Discover Albany is our website, albany.org, and my job is to really connect people like Craig and Sam to heritage sites and history. And there's one thing is about Albany, our history is incredible, but it can be intimidating. And we just found that talking over a pint, telling stories with some of these craft beverage folks, people love it.
Yeah.
So we have so much fun programming. And Sam, luckily at Pump Station, when he found out of all these projects Craig and I were doing, and he saw how many community partners, he jumped right in. So we've got a lot of fun things to talk about.
I mean, the history of beer in the city of Albany is amazing. And I remember I took an Albany history course way back when, And there was a whole section on just the brewing, the breweries and the brewing.
Yeah.
It goes back centuries. And you guys have brewed something special for us.
Yeah.
We have. At least Sam has.
Yeah.
And this is a
tradition.
Hey, I helped.
Craig Stirred.
I got the pictures.
All right, tell us about it.
So in the 19th century, basically you had three kinds of beer. You had small beer. Table beer.
Small beer being low alcohol.
Really low alcohol.
For the kids.
Sort of like a byproduct of the brewing process.
Right.
Yeah. Children drank it. You know, people who weren't in the best health could drink it. Then you had table beer, which is sort of middle of the road. Then you had strong ale. And it basically came in three colors, right? You had pale beer, amber beer, and brown beer. And then you also had porters. You know, that was it's kind of its own thing.
Yeah.
They weren't really, it was considered something different than the beer that we're drinking. So this go-round on these recreations, we decided to do a typical amber table beer from the mid-19th century, 1850s. It's based on a recipe from that time period.
Where did you find the recipe?
You know, off the top of my head, I don't remember the name of the book that I found it.
You found it in a book?
Yes.
It wasn't in somebody's, like, behind somebody's wall or anything?
No. Okay. There's actually quite a bit of information out there about, like, what was being made and how it was being made.
I mean, as far as the 1850s go, that's recent history for Albany brewing. So
that was the height of brewing in Albany. Like, that's when it was. 1850s to the 1870s was when the big breweries were really operating.
And that was because of the Hudson? And then was the tailspin the railroads or the Erie Canal?
No, the Erie Canal really, like, so if you look at the main arc of the big industrial brewers, you're talking 1820 to 1875.
Yeah.
And a lot of it has to do with the canal opening up and that the canals, you know, sort of tease with the Hudson River, and you can get ingredients coming down the canal, and the beer can be made in Albany and then sent to New York City and then end up in Hawaii. So that sort of right in the middle of the 19th century was and that's kind of why we picked this beer, because it's representative of not the strong, pale Albany ale that we did the first go-round, but it was still another popular beer style at the time.
How strong was the strong ale back in those days?
Between about 9% and 13%.
Okay, so that's strong even by today's standards. That's strong stuff. Sam Pagano, brewer at C.H. Evans, you did the brewing on this, yeah?
Yes, sir.
Difficult, or is it just the same sort of?
You know, we stuck with our current modern brewing techniques with the system we have. I'm sure there's some differences to how we brewed it, physically brewed it, than they did in the past. But I was really nervous when Craig first came to me with the recipe, because I do consider myself kind of a new school brewer, if you will, kind of young, naive, and think everything we've done throughout the years is making the beer better.
Leading up to this is all progress.
Right, right. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, let's go back 100 plus years and make this beer. And then looking at the recipe, it kind of shocked me as well. We were talking about that a little bit. Some of the percentages of the grains we use, I would never think to ever use in one of my beers nowadays.
Well, give us an example.
So what we did so a large portion of this beer is what's known as an aromatic malt. So it's like a high kiln dried malt, and it throws really intense, malty, melanoidy type flavors to the beer.
Yeah.
Even when you're purchasing this malt and you look, you know, at the suppliers and stuff, they always say, you know, recommended percentage, 20%, whatever, or less. Well, this was 75%, I think. So, you know, I've never done something like that before, and I balk at it. I'm like, oh, I don't know. But I wanted them to triple check, make sure that is what the most accurate representation, and it was. And while I would never think to do it, I'm kind of glad we did. I actually really enjoy this one.
I love this beer.
Yeah,
I love the body. And you say it's about 5%?
It's, I think, clocked in about 4.8. So yeah, a little shy of 5.
It's got plenty of body. It's a meaty beer. And I got to tell you, even though you're using a recipe that is 150 years old or more, I think it's a modern taste. I mean, I think people could go for that.
I agree. And we're going to find out next Friday. So.
Well, and I think that's part of it, too, is, like, I think that there's this, like, I don't want to say a misconception, but there's this idea that beer in the past was, like, dramatically different than it is today. And it's really not the case. You know, 150, 200 years ago, if they were going to make an amber beer, they would use amber malt to do that. You know, if they're making a pale beer, they're going to use pale malt to do that.
Yeah.
So that's why there is such a high percentage of this high-dried amber malt in there, is because that's what they did. You know, they weren't blending a lot of stuff together like you see today. But the end product is, you know, beer is beer.
Indeed. Well said. Craig Ravina is here, the co-author of the Upper Hudson Valley Beer Book and the co-founder of the Albany Ale Project. Sam Pagano is brewer at C.H. Evans Brewing Company at the Albany Pump Station. And Maeve McEnany is education and heritage coordinator at Discover Albany. We talk beer today, and we talk the history of beer today. And anything you want to talk about brewing, we have a brewer in the house. Our number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. We'll get to the phones in a moment. It's a Food Friday, and today we talk beer. 800-348-2551 is the number. Craig Ravina, the man in the tall hat, Sam Pagano is here, and Maeve McEnany, you are there. 800-348-2551 is the number. Jim in Poughkeepsie. Jim, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. I was wondering if you folks, after I hang up, could discuss the Hedrick Brewery and Hedrick's beer.
All right, the Hedrick Brewery and Hedrick beer. Thanks, Jim, for the call.
Sure. So Hedrick was a brewery that opened in the mid-19th century up on Central Avenue. It was basically making beer for the German population in West Albany.
Yeah.
The real big story about Hedrick is that after Prohibition, it closes, and it's essentially acquired by Dan O'Connell and the
who is the head of the Democratic machine in Albany for years and years.
So there's speculation that it was operated during Prohibition by him, but more importantly, even after Prohibition, there was a saying that if you didn't carry Hedrick in your bar, you couldn't get a license to operate. And actually, Thomas Dewey, when he's running for governor, he's stumping in Long Island, and he says that, you know, he's talking about the political machines in Brooklyn and in Albany, and he brings the fact up that you had to have Hedrick beer in order to operate.
Was it good beer?
We hear mixed.
Yeah.
There are some who have said it was good. There's some who blame Dirty Lines, and whether that's politics being what it is.
Right. Yeah.
I always consider the descriptions I've read. I bet it was a good summer beer after you mowed the lawn.
Yeah.
I bet a Hendrick's tasted real good on a hot day.
It was. I can almost guarantee that after Prohibition, it was very similar to every other, you know, American light lager that was being made at the time.
Dirty Lines, though. I tell you, I've been to some bars around the region. If you get a dirty line, you got a real bad hangover the next day.
Yep. Yeah.
It doesn't taste so bad at the beginning, but the next day, boy, I tell you what. Now, Craig, you were on maybe like a year ago, and you had a different heritage beer that you were talking about, didn't you?
Was that the Albany Ale that we did, though?
I think so.
Like the strong one, the pale, yeah. Sam and I made that one too. Mm-hmm.
That was that was a Discover Albany collaboration.
Yeah, but who was it for? What did we do that for?
This was a program. It was called Prost, and this kind of what kicked off what Albany's doing, which is working with heritage sites and our local brewers and distillers. So we had Albany Distilling Company. We had the Albany Pump Station, and we went to sites like Tenbrook Mansion. We went to Crailo State Historic Site. We went to the Stephen and Harriet Myers residence. And the idea was, this is what people would drink in this house or near this house. Mm. So we actually had
in the time, the era. Right.
And there was actually a series of different drinks that was made throughout the year. It was pretty ambitious.
Yeah.
But again, it was this idea, is what's the best way to connect with history? You know, if somebody says, oh, I don't like history, but I like to eat and drink.
Well, you make a point.
And it was great fun.
That beer was the beer that sort of made Albany famous, right? That was the beer that went to Hawaii or went to Suriname.
This was the XXX?
Yeah, that was a strong one that was like between 9 and 13%. The most notable of those brewers would have been John Taylor. He was a mayor. There's a lot of connections to politics and beer in Albany, and including Hedrick 100 years later. But that beer was sort of the thing that put Albany breweries really on the map.
And that was when? 17?
No, that was like 1850. That's the same time that this beer. I mean, these two beers would have been like brothers to each
other.
Okay,
now let's go back, and we'll get back to the phones in a minute, 800-348-2551. Let's jump back 200 years.
Okay.
Let's go back to the Dutch mid to late 1600s.
All right.
And I know there was brewing going on even in the Beverwyck days.
Yeah,
And what do we know about that?
So we know that, like, if you go to Colonial Williamsburg and you talk about, like, what kind of brewing was being done down there, there's a lot of, like, people were making beer in their homes, but there wasn't an industry. In Beverwyck in 1650, 1660, there were 8 or 9 breweries that were operating, supplying taverns, and, you know, there was a trade between Beverwyck in New Amsterdam, and what they made their beer out of was a little different than what we make beer. Primarily, beer is made out of barley today, malted barley.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, wheat was so prevalent in New York, and it actually grew and grows a little bit better than barley does. So most of those beers were wheat-based or sometimes oat-based, too. But hops were readily available. They were growing hops. Hops grew wild here. There's records of early Dutch trading with native peoples for hops.
Yeah.
And they also imported hops from Europe as well.
And you, did you not, or maybe it wasn't you, someone who found some of the old wheat that still grows downtown. There are some spots down in the pastures where the wheat
That's new on me. I did not know that.
But what he has done on in our brew tour.
Hold on, I'm getting excited. Sam,
maybe it was the hops. I forget.
Yeah, so,
oh, all right.
So when we did the Lark Street brew tour last year, and then I haven't seen if it's grown back this year, but in a spot by which brewery was it? Where what's now the Blue?
Amsdale. It's where the Knickerbocker apartments are now on Jay and Dove.
And Craig, actually, I have some pictures of him. There's a little bit of wild hops, like growing.
Hops it was. It wasn't wheat.
Growing through the fence.
Unfortunately, they did some sort of construction right next to that, and I think they plowed them under.
Ah.
But there was one stubborn vine.
Yeah.
There's progress for you. Let's take a call here at 800-348-2551. Food Friday today with Sam Pagano, Craig Gravina, and Maeve McEnany. Aaron in Albany. Aaron, you're on.
Yeah. Hi, Ray. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm not sure. I didn't hear the last caller. I'm not sure if it's actually something that they just touched upon, but I heard J Street at the end of the call. I'm a resident of J Street in Albany, and I wanted to ask because I have some friends that live down the street on J Street, toward, you know, in the middle of the street between Lark and Dove. And I was told that the building that they live in used to be either a brewery, and there might be train tracks that where they used to ship the stuff down I'm not sure if it went to down to the trains or down to the port, but was there an active brewery or some type of beer making enterprise on J Street about between Lark and Dove Street at some point? Thanks.
Okay.
Yes. The answer is yes. There are actually two breweries in that area. There was the big blue apartment building, Knickerbocker Apartments, was the Amsdale Brewery. I think before that it was John G. White's malt house.
Yeah.
And then actually around the corner on Chestnut, going up towards Lark Street, there was T.D. Coleman Brothers, and there was a malt house down there too. So the breweries were sort of spread out all over the city. I mean, there at any given time in the mid-19th century, there were, you know, between 15 and 20 breweries operating, probably 40 to 50 in the Upper Hudson Valley in general, so...
All right. Well, Aaron, thank you for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. We talk beer today with Sam Pagano, who is a brewer. Craig Gravina, who is, I guess you'd say, a historian? Beer historian?
He's whatever.
Cool guy.
And Maeve McEnany.
History promoter.
Oh, there you go.
All right. How about that?
An entrepreneur, if you will. The education and heritage coordinator at Discover Albany is Maeve McEnany, and she is here as well. Let's jump back to the 1600s again. What recipes do we know from those days? And have you ever, guys ever attempted anything like that?
We have. We don't have a recipe, but we have an understanding of the kind of beer that they make.
So there is no recipe either here or in, say, Holland, or that you can find that would be analogous
to
what they did here?
So at that point, when you're talking about the 17th century, you're talking about pre-scientific brewing, right? There's no thermometers. There's no hydrometers. It's all sort of rule of thumb.
Yeah.
So they weren't writing recipes down. They were making the same thing over and over and over and over again, and their apprentices would come in and learn how to do that, and they would make it over and over and over, and they would pass that knowledge down.
Here. But I mean, in Germany, they've been brewing since, 1100s?
The same thing was happening in Germany that was happening.
They weren't writing anything down?
No, not really. You know, when you get into, like, the earliest brewing records that I've seen, I haven't found them myself, but I have friends who found them, really come about at the, you know, there are some home recipes that you might be able to find.
Yeah.
But industrialized brewing recipes, just there wasn't a whole lot of written down. The earliest things that I've seen were late 18th century, early 19th century, but stuff from the 17th century. But we do know, you know, we know the materials they were using, and we know sort of the methodology. We made one for Kralo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for the Proust event.
How was it?
Different. You know, it was a huge percentage of wheat, and I believe oats in there as well.
Yeah.
Tiny bit of hops for a little bit of bittering, but all of that wheat, again, a ridiculously large portion of wheat compared to what I normally would use.
Yeah.
Definitely threw like a tang to the beer. We did, you know, ferment it with bread yeast as opposed to brewer's yeast, which, you know, aren't too far off, I guess, but it definitely was an interesting beer. A little tangy from the wheat, bready, doughy almost.
But as a brewer, and a younger brewer, this must help you in your perspective.
Yeah, and that's why I think it's important. I think that's probably the main reason why I keep saying yes every time they ask me to come and do a historic beer, because, you know, it's important to know where you've come from, I guess, you know. And
the yeast is actually an important thing, too, because 200 years ago, 300 years ago, 500 years ago, bread yeast and brewer's yeast, they're the exact same thing. I mean, they are the same species, I don't know what to call them, of yeast now, but they cultivate beer yeast for making beer, and they cultivate bread yeast for making bread. But back then, it was, in fact, bakers would go to brewers and get yeast.
Huh. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Craig Gravina is here, Sam Pagano, and Maeve McEnany. And let's go to Bill in Hudson. Bill, you're on.
Yes, hi. I wanted to recount a story related to the Evans family and the beer.
We know those
from
guys.
A few years ago, actually a year ago, and maybe some of you there can confirm the story. Friend and I were actually having some pump station at the local bar where we can get at the Spotty Dog, and a descendant of the Evans family walked in, and we struck up a conversation, and he told us that the Evans brothers, I guess there were a pair of brothers that ran the brewery here in town, here in Hudson, mm-hmm. back in the day, but when Prohibition came along and shut them down, one brother said, okay, it's time to sell all the equipment, get rid of the brewery. The other brother said, no, this Prohibition thing won't last. And the first brother won out, so they sold everything. And after Prohibition was done, the two brothers never again spoke to one another.
Yeah.
Of course, they lived here in town. They actually lived next to each other here in town, but apparently they didn't talk to each other ever again. So,
is that true, you think?
Yeah, that's so. The gentleman you're probably speaking of that came into Spotty Dog, so C.H. Evans Brewing Company is Cornelius Henry Evans. Our owner, Neil, is Cornelius Henry Evans IV. So that gentleman he's talking to you about was actually his grandfather, and his grandfather was kind of, you know, almost the staunch libertarian. Government came in and said he couldn't, you know, sell a product, and he said, the hell with that. And then, that story is actually true.
Wow, amazing. Bill, thank you for the call. And so a descendant of the family actually owns...
Oh, yeah. So that was a big deal with Neil. So most people know us as Albany Pump Station, Pump Station, but our given name is C.H. Evans Brewing at the Albany Pump Station. So Neil wanted to tie in his history of his family's brewery, founded in 1786. Right.
Wow.
And so he brought that back.
Does Neil feel the weight of the ages, the fact that he does something that the family has done for so long?
I think he feels the weight of running a restaurant for 20 years more than anything else. And he's probably listening right now. So
not
up,
not a time to have perspective, I suppose. The number is 800-348-2551. It's Beer Today and the History of Beer with Sam Pagano, Maeve McEnany, and Craig Ravina. Maybe, Maeve, you can recall this, and my memory is notoriously horrible. A year or two ago, did they not find some old tanks from a very, very old brewery downtown?
Actually, that's going to bump that one over to Craig again. I know what you're talking about, the Quackenbush still.
It was way down there.
Yeah, that was a number of years ago. But when they built the parking lot, which is right by where I work, the Albany Visitor Center, and right by the Albany Pump Station, yeah, they found the old rum barrels. And from what I understand, you can see the barrels at the New York State Museum. But the barrels, you know, Quackenbush rum, Albany Distilling makes a inspired Quackenbush rum, but the barrels were made with, it was like pine. Is that what, am I right about that, Craig? I don't know if you, but they say that the Albany.
I don't know.
He's going to pass on this.
Let's just say it was wood.
Yeah,
but the thing was that the Albany rum was likely not very good because the barrels, with the pine barrels, and actually made it sort of sappy and great. But they found it was the oldest, one of the oldest colonial remnants of
that's amazing.
It was really pretty incredible.
And now it's a parking garage, right?
Yeah.
Well, yes. But you can visit the barrels at the museum.
That's another show. The fact that much of Albany history has been paved under. Craig, are there, in your estimation, are there breweries we know nothing about from this city from way back when?
The really early Dutch breweries, we might know who owned them.
They were great record keepers, right? So we had roles of who owned what and who lived where.
Yes, and so we know where some of them were located, and we know who owned them, but we don't know their output. We don't know that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I've come across some advertisements 100 years later from the Dutch, the end of the 18th century, that talks about small breweries being for sale, and they'll give a volume amount, like the capacity of that brewery, and it's usually about 15 barrels, which is 5 barrels more than you guys produce right now, right?
Yeah.
You're a 10 barrel
system?
We're
a 10 barrel system, so 310 gallons.
When they say 15 barrels in how much time?
It's a single brew. You have the capacity to make 15 barrels of brew a single time.
Well, that's a fair amount.
So that's what it is. Like, it's not, these are industrial commercialized places, right? That's a big place that can produce, you know, not an exorbitant amount of beer, but, you know, it's about what Sam produces every year.
Right. Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number on this Food Friday. John in Del Mar. John, you're on.
I'm partial to beers that have less hops. And I noticed that Pilsners and other beers that are less hoppy are getting less popular now. And I wondered if you could comment on that from a historical perspective. Were beers back then really hoppy or more like Pilsners?
Sam was so excited to answer that question, too.
No, because once you tied in history, Craig's going to go with history. But, I mean, so a lot of times, when it's, you know, in this country, especially when you say Pilsners, people kind of tend to think of your macro beer, you know, produced post-prohibition, you know, light lagers.
Yeah.
And those are not a good representation of Pilsners from around the world, like in Czechoslovakia and Germany, where they are pretty heavily hopped. Now, they're not hopped with American hops that are citrusy and grapefruity, but they're more noble varietals, but they have pretty good hop presence.
Absolutely.
If you were to have a Pilsner or Kel, which is like the Pilsner, there's hops in there for sure.
But what we're drinking now is clearly not a very hoppy beer.
No, I mean, it all depends on how you use the word hoppy. You know, most people, when they say hoppy, they're thinking of the flavor and aroma. Right.
Yeah.
This has a good amount of hops, actually a lot of hops in it. But
I would suspect it has a lot of everything in it.
Yeah.
It's got a little bit of bitterness on the
it's
back
got
end,
the bite.
Too, that I was surprised at.
Yeah.
Like, when we first tried it, I was like, oh, man, this is, especially even before when it was still pretty green and we hadn't carved it up yet or anything. So,
no, what do you mean carved it up?
So, you know, yeast naturally produces alcohol and CO2 through fermentation. That's what it does. It eats the sugars, digests in alcohol and CO2. During fermentation, we have to let some of that gas escape so we don't, you know, blow up a tank.
Sure.
So at the end, in our final tanks, you know, there's little carbonation stones. We just force gas in to get it to that effervescence that we that we all know.
Oh, carbon up. I thought you said carbon up. Now I understand.
But that changes, you know, that changes how that beer feels in your mouth, too, right? So the perception of its taste changes. So it to me, is less bitter than when we first had it out and it was more along the lines of a cask beer. But it's still got a little bit of a bite to it.
I gotta say, this is a winner. I really like this beer.
I've been a skeptic of every historic beer he's come to with. And
so who hasn't?
He's 2-0 though so far. Because I tell you, 2-1. I wasn't big on the New Netherlands beer.
I think we need to try that one again. I think we need to
there was some drama in that brewery.
All right, I'll tell you what. I'll let you three fight that out. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is our number. 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. And welcome back to A Food Friday. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Maeve McEnany is with Discover Albany. Sam Pagano is C.H. Evans Brewing Company. And Craig Gravina is co-founder of the Albany Ale Project. And you have a big week coming up, right?
Yeah. So next week is the start of Albany Craft Beer Week. And we carved out a day, Friday, May 3rd. We're going to be releasing this Albany Amber Ale.
The one we are drinking now.
Yes, the Albany Amber Ale citywide. So we will be doing tastings at some bars and restaurants. We're going to be at Oliver's, Westmere Beverage. We're going to be at Lost and Found, Albany Ale and Oyster, Lionheart, Nine Pin Cider Works, and ending at Allen Street Pub with a special cask tapping.
Yeah, rock and roll beer drinking expedition.
That's it.
And so this beer will be available, I assume, for a limited time, and then it's done?
Yeah, I mean, half of this batch is going out to those places, and that only leaves us with a small percentage left at the pub.
And Sam, the way I read you here, you'll be just as happy when you don't have to do this, right?
you know, keeps me on my toes. Yeah.
Until Craig's next project.
They've already roped me into something else. So,
all right, that's May 3rd, and that begins where?
I believe it starts at Oliver's at 1 p.m., Oliver's Beverage Center.
Yeah, sure.
And it's literally all day.
Okay.
We're just going to be hitting... Bars
very informal.
And bars and
fair enough.
Beer places. Yeah,
we
just
put
come
it on
down.
Our website, the schedule, albany.org. We'll have the schedule there. It's on Facebook.
Yeah, we have an event on Facebook as well if you go to the C.H. Evans Brewing at the Albany Pump Station page.
They're going to be all over.
And what is all this now? Maeve, you said, well, you got to talk about Moby Dick.
Yeah.
What's up with that?
So it's Herman Melville's 200th birthday, and he's got an Albany connection. He's got a brewing connection.
Really?
That his grandfather was Colonel Gansevoort, his maternal grandfather. Did I get it right, Craig?
Yeah. Ray looked at me like, is that true?
Yeah, no, it really is.
I always look at the guy with the top hat.
She's totally lying to you.
Yeah, I'm making it up as I go. No, so the Writers Institute, Historic Albany Foundation, Discover Albany, we decided that we could read the book in a summer. So 100 pages every month. And then we go to the Albany Pump Station and Sam brewed Melville's Wit. So we drink a pint, we talk about the 100 pages, and then we bring in a Melville expert.
Cool.
I'm not a Melville
and
expert.
It's
me either.
So fun. So we do that once a month. It's probably one of my favorite nerdy things.
Great. Tell us about Melville's Wit.
So they came to me again about potentially having a beer themed after Melville, and I have to draw the line at historical beers quarterly. so I said, you know what, I'll give you the name. And it started out as an American wheat ale with, you know, lots of wheat malt, coriander, orange peel. And then the beauty of my profession, you get to experiment. Mid-brew, I decided to just dump in a bunch of Citra hops. So it's very citrusy, very much new school IPA.
In no way
flavor.
Historically accurate.
It is not Colonel Gansevoort was not... too citrusy.
No.
Don't know what they would have thought of this beer.
You have some.
I do have some. Oh, yeah. We got it.
Why are you holding out on me?
I can't.
All right, I'll tell you what. I'll read an email. You pour a little of that. The number here is 800-348-2551. This email came in from our buddy Gina, and the subject heading is sour beer. Gina writes, what is that about? What makes it sour?
Oh, Gina, that's a good question. I actually brought a sour beer as well.
Yeah.
So sour beers, depending on how you brew it, could be soured in different ways, but essentially you're relying, instead of brewer's yeast, you're relying on different bacterias almost. So your Pediococcus, Lactobacillus, Brettanomyces.
We're on the radio. Easy.
I know, right?
Easy.
But, you know, the sour I brought today, and what you see a lot of brewers doing, it's known as a kettle sour.
Yeah.
And we're actually souring it hot side with lactobacillus. I literally use Good Belly, which is a probiotic drink. With loads of lactobacillus in it. I let it sour over the weekend. Then I boil it to kill all that lactobacillus and ferment it as normal. A lot of them I add fruit to. The one I brought today actually has New York State Concord grape juice in it. So,
okay.
Oh, that's the one you brought.
Yeah, it's a growing trend in beer.
And I don't understand it.
Tart,
I'm not
refreshing,
a fan of the
sour
beer. I don't know.
Now, here's the thing, right? There's a beer style called a Berliner Weiss, which is a really tart.
Very nice,
right,
with the raspberry around the glass, yeah.
That beer shows up in the United States in the 1840s. And it's actually really popular. It rivals lager at the end of the 19th century.
Yeah.
Low ABV, low alcohol.
Yeah.
In it. So sour beers, it's sort of a trend now. It's coming back. It's been around in Europe for a long time. But
yeah,
it's been in the U.S. for a long time as well. The sour beers that are being made now are a little bit more funky than what they were in the past.
And
right?
Some
there's
of them
a lot
are
of experimentation.
Just too sour for my taste.
Yeah.
This Melville's Wit is a fascinating beer, and it's quite a gear shift from what we have been drinking.
It is different.
You
sure.
got hops in the nose. It's very
you get
tasty.
A little bit of that coriander and some of that bitter orange peel in there as well, but definitely a hop-heavy beer.
Our number here is 800-348-2551, and we'll jump right back to the phones in a minute. This one is from Catherine. Matthew Vassar's beer. What was it like? Do you know? Who's Matthew Vassar?
Matthew Vassar was the founder of Vassar College.
Oh, and he was a brewer?
Yeah, that's how he made his money to open. His father was a brewer.
I don't know when that's going to happen for
right.
me.
I know, you got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, there you go.
His father, he never wanted to brew. His father was a brewer. His brother had taken over the business. There was a fire at the brewery, and his brother was inspecting the damage and went into a tank and was overcome by carbon monoxide poisoning, carbon dioxide poisoning,
very
carbonic acid,
right,
and died.
Oh,
and
boy.
Matthew kind of took over and really built a large, well-known brewery that exported from the Hudson Valley to the Midwest. You see his beer. His beer would have probably been pretty similar to what we're drinking right now. He made what he called single and double ale. So that would have been, this would have been probably his, like a single ale. Double ale would have been a little bit stronger than this.
And when they say double, you mean more malt?
More, just strong, strength-wise. So his single beer.
How do you make it stronger is my question.
How do you make, yes. So more malt.
Okay.
The more malt you put into it, the stronger it's going to
okay.
be. This would have been like his single amber, and he made that. And we know that he used high-dried malt. We know that he used amber malt. So it's probably pretty similar to what we're drinking right now.
All right, the number here is 800-348-2551. Maeve McEnany, Sam Pagano, and Craig Ravina here, and let's jump back to the phones and take a few calls. Ryan in Massachusetts. Ryan, you're on.
Hey, guys. I just had not directly about making beer. I was kind of wondering how the companies, over the years, kind of fed off of each other and kind of like interacted. Out in Massachusetts right now, a lot of these smaller kind of craft breweries and stuff that are operating out of like a garage, there's a lot of like community events where they're all kind of showing up and helping each other out. Just kind of curious how that stuff kind of, manifested in Albany and New York in general over the years.
Are you talking about the large industrial brewers of the 19th century, how they got along?
Probably not that well.
No, they all hated each other.
Did they?
Yeah, these guys were all, millionaires, and they would invest their money in different things, especially like steamboats in the early 1820s, as the canal and the river started really working on.
Yeah.
And there was a report in the newspaper, I think it was in an obituary later on, one of these guys died, about this guy named Robert Dunlop, who was an Albany brewer, and this other guy named Lancelot Fiddler, getting in a fight in the middle of the street because Dunlop sort of backdoored Fiddler on buying a bunch of steamboats, and they had it out in the middle. And that was in Dunlop's obituary.
Well, that's great. All right, back to the phones and Joe in Earlton. Joe, you're on.
Yeah, hi guys. Great show.
Thanks
for taking my call.
Sure.
I hear silence. I'm sure you can hear me.
You're there. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, good. Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, okay. So I'm almost 70, and I'm a younger end of the family. And my my aunts and uncles, they're from German descent. So couldn't talk radio, appreciate that. They're from Alfaya, and they're from the Bavaria area. And they always spoke, especially my uncles, spoke of something called Bock beer. I think it came out in the spring, and they used to describe it as from the last bit of the hops or of the malt, and it made a different type of beer. It was a dark beer. I think even Schmitz, without giving a brand name, but they were fond of Schmitz. Schmitz even came out with one for a while in the 50s, I think. So are you familiar with that? Can you speak to that?
I love Bock beer.
Yeah, Jenny Bock.
Well, there's Jenny Bock. There's also some like stronger Bock beers out there. There's my Bock, too, which is really, really good.
Yeah,
that's the spring one.
What do they use for that? Why is it different?
I have heard this bottom of the tank thing before.
Kind of a myth.
I can't break down the authenticity of that. I'm not really sure, but Bock beer, as I know it, is essentially a strong German lager.
Delicious.
So it's a lager beer. It's malt forward, and then there's variations. There's Maibock, regular Bock, Doppelbock.
And they can be light and dark.
Right, correct.
The one I like best, Joe, and I haven't had it in years, and now I have to find it, is Einbecker Urbach.
Yeah.
I love that beer. Good stuff.
They're always caramelly. They always Bock's
rich malt character.
Yeah, I like
and the Hackershore Maibock, which I haven't seen in years around here. So.
And you know, in the
you
mid,
may not ever see it again, then, huh?
Find it
in the post-prohibition era. You would see a lot of breweries making, you know, the ones that had the German heritage. They would make a lot of Bock. That was one of their go-tos.
Do American brewers touch that? I mean, usually I just get German. Like I had a Celebrator the other day, Doppelbock, just a beautiful.
That's a great
There
one.
Are some guys who do one in the southern tier, I think.
Probably. I know we do. Neil C.H. Evans, our owner, his favorite beer style, one of them is a Doppelbock.
Really?
Which I didn't brew last year. I will be brewing this year, late fall, early winter.
Right. It would be later in the season.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey, Joe, good luck with that. You'll find it, my friend. Over to Dick in Coxsackie. Dick, you're on.
Hi. I just want to share some information with you. I'm a trustee down at the Bronk Museum in Coxsackie.
Yeah.
And I've done some research on Peter Bronk, who was a brewer in Beverwick.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, back
he
in the day.
He was chased out of town and came down here to Coxsackie. And my research shows that near beer was not a byproduct, as was one of your guests mentioned, but actually was produced on purpose by filtering the beer 7 times. And that removed a lot of the sugars so the beer could not get a high alcohol content.
That's interesting. Well, Craig, what do you think?
I also discovered that hops are not native to North America. The Dutch first had to import their hops. And since hops were a plant, the seeds eventually escaped. And that's why you find them growing in this area.
There are no native hops in this country?
That's what my research told me.
Huh.
And I wanted to share something. You mentioned Moby Dick.
Yeah.
In Moby Dick, they're sitting on the deck of the Pequod drinking Flip. And I'm surprised you didn't mention that.
Flip
is a traditional drink of the valley. And it was made with beer, usually beer brewed from wheat. And they added molasses and rum to it. And then they heated it up with a polka.
Craig's
and
made it for us.
As a wintertime drink.
Wow, yeah. Dick, Craig has apparently made this.
Yeah, Tenbrook Mansion.
Flip isn't something the Dutch would have drank. Flip is very British. Flip doesn't really show up until the 1690s.
Yeah.
And the Hudson Valley was still Dutch at that point, still Dutch culturally.
Yeah.
But that's when you start seeing a lot of the rum come in.
Yeah.
And so now as far as the hops not being native to North America, I mean, I'm not quite sure that they were.
I mean, I know, Indian Ladder Farm and some other places, and I can't think of their name in Connecticut, have cultivated wild hops that they found, but
we know that by the 17th century,
right?
Native groups were trading hops with
what Dick
with
says
the Dutch.
May be true, but however, I can't believe that in the West.
Yeah.
There are not hops that are native, but
there probably weren't hops. Well, I don't. You're putting me on the spot here, and I don't know how to answer that.
Good thing the show's almost over.
The hops industry went west, right?
Right.
So they went. They were cultivating hops and bringing them to Wisconsin, right, and then bringing them over over to the western part of the state. But Peter Bronk, the small, there were breweries that made small beer specifically, but I don't know how much small beer was made on purpose by early Dutch brewers.
Hmm. Very interesting line of possible investigation. Rob in East Granby, Connecticut. Rob, you're on.
Great show. Thanks, guys. As Alan would say, I'll keep it short, seeing what time it is. Hey, most of my buddies drink the hoppy beers. When I say hoppy, it's the IPAs.
Yeah.
I prefer more of a Belgian style, and there doesn't seem to be quite a selection out there. I don't know if I don't want to mention names, but like Blue Moon, which is really not a good.
Well, you just did mention a name.
Yeah, I know, but it's not like, you know, what am I trying to say?
Right, I get you. All right, we get your
point. Can you tell me, what's the difference? And I haven't either established the palate for those, you know, it's like chewing on a 2x4 is how I say to them.
Some people, you know, it's cyclical, Rob. The hop thing, you know, we've seen it coming, but 30 years ago, plenty of European-style beers, mostly from Europe, but... you know, times, they change. Go ahead.
Taste is subjective. Right. You know, it makes sense. You like what you like. Belgian-style ales are just a different category of the ale spectrum, and they tend to throw a lot of, you know, fruity-type esters to the beer. But I definitely recommend going to your local package store, as they're called in Connecticut, and just asking somebody to point you to a good selection, because a lot of them are out there.
Okay. And are a lot of them made domestically by microbrewers?
There's a decent amount made less. I mean, we have one on draft right now. We do them occasionally, but there is usually a good selection of imports.
How many beers do you brew at any one time at CHM?
So we'll have up to 11 beers at one time. Only three of them are core staples, and the rest of them we rotate. So.
And your 20th anniversary coming up?
Yeah, our 20th anniversary is coming up in May, and June 1st. We're going to be having a really big party with bands. And
oh, really?
Oh, yeah. We're going to have music, food, drinks, all of the whole shebang. Oh,
that's pretty good.
Got it. We're closing down Quackenbush Square, which our neighbors just found out about yesterday.
Yeah. You like a party.
Yeah, so that's going to be a good time.
You think Craig will come in the hat?
He better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't let him come out without the hat.
I don't go anywhere publicly without
the
hat.
He's got more than just the hat, you know.
By the way, I'm super hot right now, too. My
you can
like
take the hat off. I mean, the show is over in a minute and a half for Pete's sake.
I'm in it to win it, Ray. In it to win it.
Maeve McEnany, what's coming up for Discover Albany that we should know about?
Yeah, so on our website, albany.org, because it's the centennial of Prohibition, there's all kinds of programming, such as like Tenbrook Mansion Speakeasy, the Cherry Hill History Fair. They're honoring William Kennedy, who, of course, writes about Legs Diamond.
Sure.
So that's a bunch of cool stuff. If you just check out our website, we've got a filter for Prohibition.
And what's the website?
Albany.org.
Well, thank you all for being here. Craig Ravina, Sam Pagano, and Maeve McEnany. Support comes from River Valley Co-op, Northampton, Massachusetts, a food co-op featuring fresh local foods, a deli department with made-to-order sandwiches, a soup and salad bar, and a bakery, rivervalley.coop. Blue Heron Restaurant and Catering, serving globally inspired, locally sourced cuisine for over 20 years. Open for dinner Tuesday through Sunday at 5, blueherondining.com. Rolling Rock Farm Salt and Seasoning, Sheffield, Massachusetts. Handcrafted in small batches, infused sea salts, peppers, and blends, specializing in garlic and hot pepper blends, rollingrocksalt.com. And the Egremont Village Inn, presenting the Lucky Five on Friday, April 26th. Saturday night, Wild Leek River, with opener Gregory Stovetop, karaoke every Sunday, and open mic every Wednesday, the EgremontVillageInn.com. Once again, thanks to Craig Gravina of the Albany Ale Project, Sam Pagano of C.H. Evans Brewing Company at the Albany Pump Station, and Maeve McEnany of Discover Albany for joining us today. Thank you for joining us as well. Thanks to Zach Malloy for the sterling service at the controls this week. Barb King took your calls. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Have a great weekend. Stand by for the best of our knowledge.